I'm delighted now to welcome Arthur Zee. He is a poet. He's the author of 8 books of poetry and 1 book of translation of Chinese poetry. And he has a new book. He's edited a new book called Chinese Writers on Writing, about which he will be talking at Collected Works Bookstore this coming Thursday at 6 in the evening. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So this is a book of all kinds of Chinese writers from, well, pretty much the early 20th century to the present. How did you decide to put this together, and how did you go about doing so?
I wanted to do a reading of modern Chinese literature, and that in itself is quite a complex task because there are writers, prose writers as well as poets in China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, writers who were expelled from China, writers who chose to leave, Chinese writers who left at different periods after the Second World War, after the Cultural Revolution, after the democracy demonstrations at Tiananmen in 1989. So there are Chinese writers in France, Canada, the United Kingdom, and the United States, as well as China, Hong Kong, and Taiwan. So there are all sorts of tensions and complexities. But I chose 1917 as the starting point because that's the beginning of modern Chinese poetry written in the vernacular and not in classical Chinese. It's a clear break. And the other reason I focused on modern Chinese literature is there's such a huge lag time between what gets written and what is translated into English. So I felt like American readers at this point might know some of the ancient Chinese poets like Li Bai or Du Fu, but few American readers really know what's happened in China in the 20th century and even in the last 10 years.
It's striking reading through this book, and I can't say that I've read every essay by any means, but that the influence of the West on Chinese writers is significant, whereas the influence of Chinese writers on the West is perhaps negligible. I mean, a lot of Americans are interested in Eastern spirituality, but not necessarily literature.
I think that's an interesting point. One of the writers, Ji Shen from Taiwan, the founder of the modernist poetry movement in Taiwan, has a phrase where he says, horizontal transplantation rather than vertical inheritance. And what he means by that position is all of the translation of Western poetry, not just British poetry, but French, German, Latin American, these are waves of translations influencing modern Chinese literature. And if you look at American literature, you can say on the one hand the impact is small, but if you look carefully, I think you can also point out Ezra Pound, for instance, was deeply influenced by Chinese characters and the ideograms and his whole idea of juxtaposition. Poets like Gary Snyder are very influenced by Asia. So there is some impact. But again, I think there's a huge lag time. And there's often a misunderstanding. I mean, Ezra Pound didn't know Chinese, and he misconstrued how the Chinese language works. Gary Snyder understands it a little better. But you're right in the sense that there's a lopsided influence.
You grew up in New York, but speaking Chinese, did you also learn the writing system when you were young?
I did not. I grew up speaking Mandarin because my mother and father were born in Beijing and came to the States before the Second World War. And like many immigrants, they thought I should be as American as possible. And Chinese was spoken, but it wasn't emphasized. And it wasn't until I was formally writing poetry that I wanted to read the ancient poems in Chinese, and I studied Chinese at University of California at Berkeley. So that's where I learned the written language.
The written language is, to a Western sensibility, very, very difficult to even grasp how it works. Maybe you could tell us, I mean, of course it's a 20-hour conversation, but maybe you could tell us some of the fundamentals, and above all, how the way Chinese is written influences Chinese poetry and writing.
That could go on for hours. It's a wonderful topic to initiate. Let me say that ancient Chinese characters are often based on pictures or images in nature. So the character for sun is like a circle with a dot in it. The character for moon is a crescent. You can think of them almost as if they were petroglyphs at Tsangkhui or somewhere in the southwest. But the unusual thing about Chinese is juxtaposition. If you take the character sun and you juxtapose the character moon, you create the word bright. If you take a tree or plant and write the plant tip on fire, you create the character autumn. And if you put autumn in the heart, you create the character sorrow. So it's a very visceral, intensely visual language.
And basically, if you learn it, you already have those metaphors floating around in your soul.
Absolutely, absolutely. So classical Chinese poets use those aspects of the character in their written poetry. So Du Fu might have the rain radical appear visually across the horizon of the poem. But let me say modern Chinese is a very different language from classical Chinese because of all of the translations of Western technology, science, literature. Xi Chuan, one of the writers, says the distance between modern Chinese and ancient Chinese is beyond comprehension for a Western reader. It's as far as the distance between French and modern Chinese. And that's because, for instance, over 50% of the vocabulary of modern Chinese doesn't exist in ancient China. There's no television, radio, cell phone, atom bomb, electricity. All of those modern words had to be invented through connecting certain old Chinese characters and putting them to create strings of characters.
Whereas when we have new concepts and so on, we just spell them phonetically. We don't have to come up with pictures.
Right. So let me just say the situation of modern Chinese is a fascinating, complex one where you have the ancient Chinese characters, but you have all of these imports too. You have new vocabulary, new syntax, and really a huge kind of psychological pressure from Western languages and Western thinking applied onto the Chinese language system.
Really?
Yes.
What does that look like?
Well, in modern Chinese, you have what are called simplified characters. So many of the ancient derivations are stripped away so that people can read and write more quickly. But still in the characters, you have a kind of a sketch or a shadow of the tradition.
So do little children in Beijing learn ancient Chinese characters?
No, they're learning modern Chinese characters, what are called the pinyin, the simplified characters.
So we're talking to Arthur Zee about his new book, Chinese Writers on Writing. Let's talk about being a writer in China, which does not have a free speech clause in its constitution, and there's a very high cost to being a writer in China, particularly in certain times in history.
Let me start by saying or sharing experiences of contemporary Chinese poets I know who have left China who now live in the West. And one poet from China said, in China, there was so much pressure because there's so much attention and reverence paid to poetry. In the 1970s and 80s, they were like, those younger poets were like rock stars and they had huge followings. And their work was very carefully tracked by the authorities. When they came to America, they felt like they could write anything, but did it matter? Would anyone read what they had to write? Whereas in China, people were executed over a certain phrase. And that happens in the tradition of Chinese poetry. One emperor in prison was executed for writing the phrase, "The East Wind Will Rise Again." This is before the Song Dynasty is established. And that phrase was interpreted as a veiled call for revolution and uprising. But a lot of the modern Chinese poets have to be very careful about what they say and how those terms are couched. For instance, Yan Li's poem that I've included in this collection doesn't overtly talk about censorship, and yet the issue is clearly there.
So the writers who were exiled and who live in the West now, did they have to escape in order to save their own lives?
They did, or they felt they would be silenced. Gao Xingzhen, the Nobel laureate in fiction, who has an essay in here called The Art of Fiction, basically had a warrant out for his arrest, and he went abroad and never went back to China. A poet like Beidou left and has lived in 8 or 9 different countries, and he's recently moved back to Hong Kong, and he's in a really unusual situation where Hong Kong is a separate entity, has accepted him back, but he has not been given formal permission to re-enter China, whereas many of the other poets who left China are now able to go back to China. It's a fascinating and complex situation. Let me say, in 1946, Winnie Daw, one of the early modernist poets in this collection, got up at a demonstration and gave a speech denouncing the Kuomintang government, and he was assassinated later that day. So poetry is taken very, very seriously in China. Less so right now, I have to say, but traditionally very, very important, and up until really the last 10 years, extremely important.
Less so right now. Is there a relationship between the declining importance of poetry and the rise of the kind of media-saturated world that China has become?
Absolutely. It's been said China is now a market economy. It's all about making money. It's all about selling things. And the audience and the position, prestige of poetry has shrunk considerably over the last 5 years. So in a really interesting way, contemporary Chinese poets feel marginalized in ways that maybe contemporary American poets do too. That huge audience isn't there anymore.
Very interesting. Now, during the Cultural Revolution, poetry was suppressed and art was suppressed unless it met a kind of pretty narrowly defined aim of helping the people. I suppose it was the poetic equivalent of socialist realism art. Did anything good come from that period?
In China from 1966 to 76, basically all of the voices were silenced because you have some of the great modernist poets. Winnie Daw was assassinated. I Ching was labeled a rightist, and he was sent to hard labor in a coal mine for 10 years, where he basically went blind. You have a lot of experimentation going on in Taiwan from 1966 to 76, but very little in China. But in 76, after Zhou Enlai's death and the opening up with Democracy Wall, you have the first unofficial poetry magazine in China, which is Beidou's Jintian Today magazine, which published a lot of the what are called Misty School poets, who were the first ones to begin writing a kind of poetry that expressed their dreams and aspirations and got away from the socialist realist agenda.
There were poets who were writing basically in secret and putting their work in their closet, who then later were able to bring a backlog of work out to the public.
Absolutely. And a lot of the poetry circulated in ways that are similar to the small press scene in America, where if you're not looking at the major publishers, you have poets who just get together and put together a small magazine or journal, or, you know, to make it more contemporary, online now. And that's happening in China all the time, where you have contemporary poems appearing on websites and then they disappear, and it's a constant thing where they might be concerned about being censored or whatever, but for a brief moment these poems appear and then they disappear. And for those other poets in the 1980s, yes, they are writing and they're accumulating poems in briefcases and they're making mimeographs and they're circulating them by hand. And so that whole idea of what they called underground publication was very much alive in the 1980s.
We're talking to Arthur Z about his new book, Chinese Writers on Writing. So the essays in the book, and there are some poems in the book and pieces of writing and so on, and it, again, there's a great deal to explore, and it's kind of daunting for a Western reader to even enter this, and so I can't say anything of much use. One thing I did notice was a couple of different people had very visceral metaphors of light and blackness. Is that a particularly Chinese set of images?
I think so, in terms of yin and yang and polarities. maybe the best thing would be to read a couple of short excerpts so listeners could get an idea. I tried to have, although the focus are essays, I also tried to include poems that would support aesthetic positions. And maybe to give a listener some background, maybe a good place to start would be a paragraph from Gu Cheng, who's one of the Misty School poets. And this paragraph is called Poetry Lesson. So you have to remember this is in the 1970s, after the whole period of socialist, realist agenda and things opening up. It was a raindrop that first introduced me to poetry. On the way to my primary school, there was a spire-like pine tree, but whenever I passed by, it never spoke. Then one day, after a rain shower, when the world was fresh and clean, that pine tree suddenly was all a glitter with crystalline raindrops hanging from every needle. At that moment, I completely lost touch with my own being. Inside each single drop, I saw a rainbow floating. Each drop was full of the clear blue sky. Each drop held a new world for me. I knew then that a single drop of rain was able to contain everything and to distill everything within it. The world that sparkled in the raindrop was purer and more beautiful than the world in which we live our lives. Thus, a poem is just that, a raindrop glittering on some tree of the imagination. So for those Misty School poets, there's a lot of this kind of brilliance and clarity and excitement of discovering what language can do after having to sort of toe the socialist realist line for many years.
And I suppose there's a liberation in just simply being able to be introspective and observant, and a style of poetry that maybe in the United States has gone to a level of navel-gazing where you kind of wish they would engage with their society a little more.
Absolutely. As a point of contrast, a few years later, maybe I can read from a manifesto by Yu Zhen. This is translated into English for the first time, and over half of these works are being translated into English for the first time. Yu Zhen wrote this series of points about poetry in 1990 called The Brown Notebook, and you can see how different his perspective is from Gu Cheng. The process of writing poetry is the process of cleaning out garbage. A poet is not a genius or a romantic prince or a martyr. A poet is a worker in a factory, a language operator. To write real poetry is to refuse every metaphor. A successful poem means it has successfully cleaned all metaphors, therefore liberated its readers. Poetry is not a way of observing life, it is a way of living life. Poetry mocks those who look for depth and essence. Poetry is naming, it's as simple as that. Return to where the language came from. Return to the time before metaphor. How? I can't answer. It's poetry. And there Yu Zhen is struggling with the Chinese language, which he knows he has to use. So it's a fascinating paradox. We are in another interview.
In an interview, in the same book, he says, I'm against metaphor, but I can't be because it's impossible to avoid.
That's right. A number of years later, I couldn't help juxtaposing those two points of view because you have that divided self or that tension revealed so intimately there, absolutely.
Arthur Z is a poet, and he's the editor of the new book, Chinese Writers on Writing, and once again, he'll be at Collected Works Bookstore this coming Thursday, the 15th of July at 6 in the evening. Thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dot Foil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team, and after that, jazz. Broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, hasta mañana. Ciao.